the Abbey Stand. My name's Jackson Underhurst. On today's pod, we'll detail all the things we'd rather do instead of travelling to Devon on Tuesday night for a cup replay. The Ewes leave it late in two consecutive games, but is this character or luck? We discuss the fallout of losing to playoff rivals Northampton Town and estimate how many student fans will return after the show put on against Grimsby. We have the returns of Liam O'Neill, Dan Jones and Greg Taylor, and the magic of Mark Richards, and just how does he keep getting a start? Right, Jordan Warland, welcome.
Hello, Jack. How are you?
Very good. Jordan very kindly wrote that intro for me, and clearly I didn't read
that
through.
That Grimsby line tickled you, huh?
It made me laugh. That was a good one.
Well, how many student fans do you reckon will be back?
It was a poor showing of football. Great attendance, but we'll talk about the attendance as well later. But I just think, yeah, that was not a good advert for the game. And, yeah, it's always a bit of a slog against Grimsby. Anyway, Tom Walker, welcome as well.
Good afternoon.
So
How are we?
Very good, very good. Just the three of us in the studio today, but plenty to get our teeth into regarding Cambridge United. And, yeah, so we'll be looking back and forward, as we always do. I think best place to start is the game against Exeter. Not an ideal result. And is this good or bad news?
Good that you're still in the hat. Bad because we have to go to Exeter on a Tuesday midweek game. It's a very long way to go. And in the same week that we go to Walsall and then Carlisle. So pretty much doing the whole country. Cambridge United on tour.
Yeah, that is a slog of journeys.
Any chance that our replay might be on TV? Any other replays on Tuesday night? Doesn't scream most appealing
that I get,
Tuesday night fixture, does it?
That I get truly appalling rated, don't I?
Yeah, I think there's loads more with Sunderland, Gillingham, Wimbledon, Doncaster, with a couple of replays there. Grimsby, Newport, Ipswich, Lincoln. I think that Cambridge X is probably going to quite low down that list.
So we're saying we're not attractive enough for football. I see that. I guess it's not the worst result, is it? Like we say, we're still in the hat. We seem to, until recently, seem to do quite well away from home. Northampton and Salford have kind of shat on that record recently. But yeah, maybe we might get lucky. I think it was very obvious that Exeter had learned from their 4-0 drubbing only a couple of weeks ago.
That was great. That was good delivery right there. Right, I think it's probably, though, a little bit worrying. Or is it a little bit worrying? Kind of getting out of jail two times in a row, setting a bit of a precedent. Do we think that Cambridge United are riding their luck a bit?
Well, not really. Because we've been underperforming in terms of, you know, we look at sort of XG and things like this, which suggests that we should be doing a lot better. So maybe it's just a case of starting to see some of the rewards of that. Obviously, I can see where that sort of point comes from. You know, you don't necessarily always want to believe in it so late, but, you know, maybe it's just a case of we're sort of due a bit of luck, a bit of the sort of rub of the green, and that hasn't been coming earlier on in the season. We're starting to see it now. So, yeah, but I'll probably say no, we're not necessarily. You know, it's just a case that we're due a bit of luck, I think.
Yeah, we've had games earlier this season where we've played a lot better and not got any results. Forest Green at home springs to mind. You know, Oldham springs to mind. You know, even Grimsby to an extent, we played okay and didn't get the results. So I guess maybe you make your own luck. And I think we saw yesterday, and we obviously saw the week before against Crawley, that I don't know, sort of persistence, changes late on. I don't know. I think it's maybe more a show of character that we've managed to sort of rescue either a replay or 3 points from the jaws of defeat. So I guess credit where credit's due. But I think probably the bigger issue is, why are we in a position where we're leaving it so late these last two games? I think, you know, Crawley, those first 83 minutes were probably the worst 83 minutes I've seen us play this season. We needed an improvement in performance yesterday against Exeter, and to be honest, we didn't massively get it. Didn't get that sort of bounce, and yeah, I think the bigger issue is why we're finding ourselves in that position going into sort of the last 10 minutes of the game, chasing games at home, and I guess it's just a wider sits in that sort of wider piece about our home form under Calderwood this season has been pretty dismal. The obvious exception of the 4-0 drubbing against Exeter being kind of an anomaly to like that formation. But yeah, I think the bigger issue is, yeah, why are we in such a bad state going into the last 10 minutes of these last couple of games? And I don't know. I would probably say formation and lineup that we're going with at home is probably our biggest downfall. Tom?
Yeah, I'm really on the fence about three at the back, to be honest, because like you say, we did beat Exeter 4-0 only a few weeks ago, playing three at the back. But I've never been that convinced by it, to be honest. I do wonder now that Jones is back whether he might look to go back to four. If my memory serves correct, I think we started with four at the back at Bradford, so you wonder if that was the sort of initial plan. And then I think we beat it might be the Brentford game when we first played three at the back and it just seemed to click and we've just stuck with it from there. So you wonder whether it's time maybe for a bit of a sort of reorganisation, go back to basics and, you know, see where we can push from there, really.
Is it just three at the back, though? Because I think if you look at each block of our lineup, you've got questions about all of it. So you're right, there are questions about having three at the back. I think there are questions about who plays in the central midfield roles, and I think there's questions about who plays up top. I think there's also questions about how we supply and service those players playing in those forward roles, because the last couple of games, well, the last three games, going back to Northampton, no, four games, fuck it, the last four games since we've done a podcast, our delivery and service to our strikers has been terrible. We saw it at Grimsby, it continued into Northampton, and I've not seen anything better the last two home games, where we seem to stick with just launching long high balls for strikers who aren't target men, and we're not playing to the strengths of Sam Smith and getting him in and behind, you know, centre backs. So yeah, I think there are questions at each level, not just three at the back, but also who plays in midfield, who plays up top. I think we had the most joy against Exeter because we played 3-4-2-1. We had sort of two people behind Sam Smith, so he had sort of more support that way. We were keeping it more on the deck, and yeah, it's no surprise that our best performance and our best result came from playing to our strengths. I think the midfield three yesterday were pretty dismal. Lewis, O'Neill, Maris just seemed like they were moving in treacle. It was so slow, and it was just too slow, sort of moving the ball forward. So I don't know, maybe the question is, do we have players intelligent enough or enough quality to play the 3-5-2 that Calderwood seems to want to stick with?
I think just on the midfield as well, we really missed Lamb. He changed so much when he came on. He just looks after the ball so well, and that's, I think, what exactly we're talking about, Jordan. That's a bit more intelligence, a bit more sort of looking after it when you've got the ball, and it seemed to change when he came on. And it wasn't so long ago that a lot of people were perhaps wondering where his place was in the squad, and now he seems to be, you know, among the most important players in the team. Mm-hmm. Sort of found a new role, sort of he's found his niche almost within the squad, which seems to be quite strangely quite a sort of deep lying central midfield position, which is not necessarily what I expected to see come sort of November time. But yeah, I think you wonder about selection, and it's something that we've talked about a lot and quite extensively over the sort of past few months, certainly since Calderwood's been in. And it's been a bit, you still feel like we don't know what the best team or the best formation is, and it seems at the moment to me, and I could be wrong, like Calderwood wants to play three at the back but doesn't really know how to do it or who to play in it
or the players to support it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the point about like service to the forwards is absolutely right as well, but that 4-0 win against Exeter came playing in the way where I think it was Rolls, and it might have been Lamb actually playing just behind the striker.
Yeah, it was,
and we haven't done that since. And
it's mental. Why have we changed from a formation that spanked a team who were second or third when they came to us?
Yeah,
like
It seems absolutely crazy that, you know, you'd see that sort of success and then not do it again. So maybe it's just details. Maybe it's just sort of little changes that are needed. Just on the forwards as well. You know, we've talked a lot about Mark Richards as well. It seems like maybe he could do a bit of a run out of the team, but then you wonder, is there like a physical presence up front? The answer is probably no if Richards isn't there. So it's a bit of a dilemma, really, but one that one that Cold will have to sort out, I think.
One to fix in January. I mean, we've got questions about that later.
Yeah, we will look at that.
I don't know. Just on like Coldwood and knowing his best formation, like there's a lot of harsh, possibly definitely negative comments about Coldwood this weekend and the weekend before. I just think he strikes me as being quite a cautious manager. Like Tom said, unsure of his best formation, and it seems because he's so cautious, he doesn't want to week in, week out make big changes and lots of changes. So he just tinkers one or two players here and there. And I don't think the system is producing great displays. Like, that's evident. But at the same time, the system and the way he's setting us up is kind of grinding out results. Like, you know, we ground out a draw yesterday. We ground out, you know, two late goals against Crawley to win that game. Whereas perhaps under previous managers, we wouldn't have done that. So I think it leaves me very tepid and on the fence about just the general sort of management and governance of the team thus far this season. But I don't know. I think, although there are always questions at the back under this sort of 3-5-2, and there were questions yesterday because the goal was pretty bloody soft, really.
Yeah, it was Elliot Ward really bad.
Elliot Ward should have just hoofed that over the main stand and out. But other than that, we were pretty stout in defence yesterday, I thought. I can't remember Exeter having many attempts. Crawley, likewise, we were quite stout in defence. Northampton would be the exception to the rule. Two very, very bad goals against Northampton. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It felt like yesterday there was a bit of an atmosphere of like an FA Trophy game about it, and it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't the best advert for coming and watching United. Like, two shots throughout the game, 44% possession.
It was not a pleasant game yesterday. It was, you know, pretty poor standard. And Elliot Ward, praised against Crawley for his assist, but yeah, described here as a bit Jekyll and Hyde, and I'm not convinced by him at all. But yeah, his fault for the goal. What do we think of Elliot Ward?
I think what you see from Ward is that he's obviously a very clever player. You know, you don't play at the levels that he has in his career without having that ability. But it's kind of what you get when you sign a kind of ageing centre back, that they're going to be a bit slow at times. They're going to make mistakes that they probably wouldn't have done 10 years ago. And yesterday was, like you say, it was just so soft. It's just sloppy, isn't it? On the ball.
I'll stick out for him a tiny bit. If memory serves right, wasn't there a ricochet off Taft? Couldn't Taft have got rid in the build-up?
Yeah, it was just a very poorly defended moment. It was a very poorly defended situation. It was sort of trying to get it away by hook or by crook. And I think, you know, to be fair to Elliot Ward, he kind of tried to bring things under control, I think, by sort of playing it out from the back. And there's a time and place to be doing that, and it's not when you're in that situation. But it's one of those. If you know, I think at this level, if you're going to try and play in that style, it's inevitable that at some stage, whenever you're probably going to get caught. You know, we're not Manchester City, and that's
a little way off being Man City, I reckon.
Yeah, that's quite.
I think Jekyll and Hyde's quite a good comparison for Ward, because obviously he wasn't great yesterday, but then against Crawley the week before, he was great. That assist for Sam Smith's goal was fantastic, but then the week before that against Northampton, he was terrible. We got caught out twice with his pace, like simple balls over the top, and Northampton scored twice from it. There were contentious issues with Northampton's second, which we'll talk about later, but against Grimsby, again, had a fairly decent game. And I think you can see why Coldwood has brought him in. He is fine on the ball, perfectly fine on the ball. He can take the ball with sort of facing goal, turn around and bring sort of people into play, can pass it well. I would probably say currently he's probably the best passer in the team. I think that sounds a bit controversial, but whilst we have Barry Core version 2 still on the treatment table, I think he's the best passer that we've got. So I kind of see why he's in the team. But yeah, I think it's just sort of sums up the inconsistency that most players in the United team seem to be going through at the moment. Like, Reggie Lamb's another prime example. Like, man of the match against Grimsby and Northampton, but the following week against Crawley, wasn't in the game. And actually subbing him off and bringing on O'Neill actually changed the game in our favour. So, yeah, all the inconsistencies of a team that are going to finish 12th.
Yeah, absolutely.
On display at the moment.
Just looking briefly back to that Crawley game, that was extremely lucky from Cambridge.
Yeah, it's an odd one, isn't it? Like, there's a part of me that kind of feels sorry for Crawley, but then I remember they used to have Steve Evans as a manager, and that sympathy goes out the window.
Good.
You know, 83 minutes of that game, we were dire, and Crawley were much, much better than us. Better than their recent form would suggest, and whereas the first half was pretty equal, I guess the second half was where it was quite telling. Like, Crawley came out and looked to get a result and deservedly went in front. If they had better strikers, they would have been out of sight, I think. But I don't know. Yeah, the substitutions, and, you know, credit to Calderwood, because we quite rightly debate his substitutions or lack of substitutions or timings of substitutions. You know, Northampton was another example of this, but he got his subs right against Crawley. I think O'Neill added some oomph to the midfield. Nibs brought some pace that was needed. And yeah, those last 10 minutes where we scored twice, we definitely deserved the luck that we got. I mean, Paul Lewis's goal. I don't think I've seen anything flukier in quite some time.
Good drive and, you know, battling from him, though, isn't it? I mean, yeah, the goal itself was very lucky, but it's down to the fact that he was just chasing everything.
Yeah.
I think that's good. It's great. Good from Paul Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes a little bit back to what I said earlier. We're probably due something like that. You know, Jordan, you said, you know, quite rightly, you know, you kind of make your own luck. And we've, you know, for all of the, you know, good data that we've been posting, maybe we're due someone scoring a slide tackle from outside the foot. and you know, to be fair to Paul Lewis as well, that's what you get if you put the work in.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get those. It used to be against Notts County every time we had one like that.
Yeah.
I don't mean there can't be any other teams that have scored that many goals just sort of.
It's like three consecutive games or something, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, well, the Notts County record. Yeah.
Amazing.
And wasn't half of them, like two of them were at least Luke Berry, weren't they?
Yeah.
The other one was
Williamson.
Yeah, off his back.
Yeah. Oh, those were the days, eh?
Good old days. Yeah, we were second best against Crawley pretty much all game. And I don't know, I think it's just another advocate that the system wasn't working. We weren't really intelligent enough to play the system. And I don't know, I think the final ball was an issue. And I think that's a common issue throughout pretty much all of the last four games since we beat Exeter 4-0.
Mm.
Final ball's been an issue. We saw it against Grimsby when we were absolutely on top against the team who had no intention of leaving their own half. Saw it against Northampton when we were chasing the game. We had plenty of possession. Northampton were happy to sit back and let us have the possession, but our inability to find a final ball and our stupidity to just keep playing the same crosses into the box, aiming for target men that aren't there against big centre-backs who are bossing us. It's stupid, and it's naive, and I don't know if that's the players panicking or if that's Calderwood setting them up that way. But, yeah, it's cost us, and I think it's very apparent there's a lack of creativity in this side.
Mm.
I called him Barry Corr version 2 earlier, Samir Carruthers, but...
Mm.
There's a part of me that's like, oh, what would this team be like if we had him pulling the strings and finding those passes that unlock sort of teams? But you can't go through the season sort of with those hypothetical questions. If he's injured, he's injured. We need to find another way. We need to find someone else who can pick up that mantle. Like, it should be George Maris, but he's woefully out of form, apart from the last 10 minutes against Crawley. Paul Lewis, he seems to be adamant in playing him in a deeper role, whereas pushing forward, that's where we'll probably get the most joy out of him. And, you know, we've not seen Jack Rowles for a couple of weeks. We're desperately missing Jack Rowles' creativity and ability to sort of find another option.
Of course, Rowles is only temporary for Cambridge anyway, to January, isn't it? And the more you see Spurs scraping one all draws with Sheffield United, the more that you think Jack Rowles might be on his way back to Spurs. But
He won't get the Spurs first team, mate.
No, I know, but...
Don't be silly.
He's very good, isn't he? But he's only a temporary fix and almost like a bonus for Cambridge, really.
I suppose that's the thing about
say the same about Sam Smith, can't you?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose that's the thing about teams at this level. And, you know, if you take a Rolls and you take a Carruthers out of any team in this league, they're inevitably going to struggle to create chances and to, you know, be able to kind of open up defences. But like you say, Jordan, that's the situation we're in, and, you know, life's not fair, basically. But this is kind of becoming a bit of a theme, which is a bit worrying, sort of really struggling to break teams down. You know, thankfully, the fact that the players keep at it and keep going means that we have got that bit of luck in the last couple of games. But the Grimsby game was very similar to Northampton. You know, 10-man Grimsby coming to the Abbey, and they were happy to just let us have the ball, basically. I think we must have had sort of, you know, probably 80% possession in that game and did virtually nothing with it. And it's, you know, becoming a bit of a theme, I guess. But yeah, like I say, you know, once you get Carruthers back in there, once you get Rolls back in there, you know, I'm pretty confident that it might start to look a bit better. So definitely missing Rolls, really starting to sort of grow into the team before he sort of went away, and then obviously picked up a bit of a knock, it seems, as well. So so yeah,
there's a question later on about best formation. I wonder if it's worth bringing that up now, because obviously we've listed loads of midfield names, but I wonder what the key is to getting it right in midfield. Like, who, you know, how would you how would you set the midfield out, and who would you have in that sort of midfield?
It's tough, isn't it? We've got a big squad. We seem to do this every year. We seem to end up with a really quite inflated squad, and fitting those players into the team, sometimes it's the case that someone's going to have to miss out. You know, there's plenty of times where good footballers haven't got the right opportunities. It just happens. And, you know, if you have to drop a Lewis, if you have to drop pardon me, a Hannon or someone like that for the benefit of the system, then that's what you've got to do. You know, you look through our squad list and there's probably, you know, a good 27, 28 players there. I'm including the likes of sort of Warman and Norva Williams, who, you know, aren't necessarily involved to the extent of most of them, but this is what Calder's paid to do. He's got to find a way of getting these players into the best system. It looks like, you know, like we said earlier, it's probably going to stick with three at the back. And he's got to find the right combination of players and whatever formation he goes with to get the most out of them. And at this moment in time, he can probably argue either way that he is or isn't doing that. So, yeah, we shall see.
Do you see Gary Deegan anywhere coming back ever?
I don't know.
Great,
really.
Great question.
They don't seem to talk about him, to be honest. I don't really know where he is in his recovery.
He's cropped up in a few videos post-match, so he seems to be in and around the club on match days, which is encouraging to see that he's still part of the squad and the club are sticking by him. I think you could maybe make a case that there's a lack of a ball winner in our midfield at the moment. O'Neill flirts with that kind of role, but other than that, there's no real sort of ball winner to get the possession back. But I'm not sure we desperately need that. I don't think we've been missing a hard man this season. I think what we've been missing is obviously a bit of pace and a bit of creativity for a midfield. And it's hard for me to talk about Carruthers because I feel like I've missed his one appearance this year where he really set the standard. I think it was Crewe away.
Yeah, that's when he picked up the injury.
But listening to that game, it sounded like he was pulling the strings.
Yeah. On Sammy Carruthers, I think it's quite obvious to most people that he's a player that would not be at this level if he didn't have this sort of knack for picking up injuries. We wouldn't be able to sign a player like that otherwise. It's that simple. So it's a shame, but, you know, like you said, Jordan, we can't keep saying what if he was fit, what if he was fit. The facts are he's not fit. The midfield, you know, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because we don't seem to have that sort of natural, you know, Tom Champion was there yesterday. We don't seem to have that player. We don't seem to have that player in the team. I think O'Neill is probably as close to that as we have. And you know, I think when he's played this season, he's actually been pretty good. So I think he's someone that goes in, you know, into the team sheet pretty much straight away. I think Maris, you struggle to make too much of a case that he should be on the team sheet.
I mean, he's riding that form the second half of the season, first season of Joe Dunn, in my eyes. He's still riding the fucking coattails of that.
Yeah.
Was it 2-year deal he got given in the summer?
Yeah.
Needs to step up, in my opinion. We saw a glimpse of it against Crawley when he got pushed further forward. So the player is still there. I think just in the harsh reality is that Calderwood has to find a tactical fix, and he needs to find it quick. Because as it stands at the moment, we are either pumping the ball long to Mark Richards in this makeshift target man role that he isn't. He just isn't that role. We need to find a way so that Richards isn't playing with his back to goal, and whether that's you know, playing it through the middle more, maybe going back to more of a diamond and having a 10, someone there to sort of help Smith and Richards out and cut out the sort of pumping it forward. Or you drop Richards and you play a formation where you have a few, I don't know, sort of extra runners in around that sort of you know, maybe a false nine kind of position, a bit like how we did against Exeter, you know, have roles, another and Smith playing that sort of kind of fluid sort of front free role. I think he needs to perhaps get some guts and make that call. You know, he's also got the likes of Dallas and Nibs sat in the squad. You know, Dallas we paid a fee for. Nibs he knows from his time at Villa and brought him here. But yet we're not seeing those players. And I think he said after the Northampton game that the younger players need to show more in training throughout the week to warrant their starts. And fair enough, you know, we don't see what happens in training, but it's getting to a point where you're sort of questioning, why are we not seeing more of these players? Why are we not giving them an opportunity at the expense of someone who's only here till January, who is playing a role in a formation that he has struggled with for the last, what, 8 weeks? 6 to 8 weeks?
Probably more than that, really. Yeah. Since the sort of end of August, I think. He struggled to adapt, basically. You know, obviously we've not seen the best of Mark Richards, I don't think. But to my knowledge, and I could be completely wrong, his career has been made on sort of being a bit more of a poacher.
Absolutely.
Not being a target man. But, you know, I think it goes back to what we said earlier. You know, the best success that we've had this season has come from playing a slightly different system, and we've not done it again. Which, you know, to me seems quite baffling. But you know, I'm not the professional.
It feels like we've gone backwards since we last sat in the studio post that 4-0 win against Exeter, where it looked like tactically everything had fallen into place. Got the right sort of options in the back three. We offered, you know, enough cover with that sort of four in front of them, and then we had creativity throughout the midfield into the attack, which was built on people who could pass the ball and pace, and it brought out the best in that team. And in a, you know, very short space of time, we seem to have gone backwards. And I know obviously part of that is due to not having Jack Rowles. Luke Hannon was injured yesterday, so we've obviously had injuries. I mean, the squad, thinking about it, was quite weak going into Northampton. I don't think there were a lot of options on the bench. So obviously we've struggled with injuries, but I don't know. I think Calderwood needs to be braver and stick with that formation that served us so well against Exeter, because that was the best performance of the season.
On a slightly different note, just general comment really, Sam Smith is really good, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is superb. The goal against Crawley was unbelievable. I don't think we probably haven't talked about Smith that much, to be fair. Probably not as much as we should do. You know, the guy works so hard. He's got obvious quality. 7 goals for the season, you know. It's November.
Mate, we were so desperate for what a 1-in-3 striker last season, and now we've got one. And you're right, he is absolutely quality. I said on the last pod, he reminds me of Martin Butler. I stand by that. The goal against Crawley, like Tom said, was quality. You know, we talk about Ward's pass out of defence, but his first touch to take it down was brilliant. And I don't disagree with any of that. Like, Sam Smith is brilliant, but he's the kind of striker who needs to be in and behind the kind of sort of centre-backs. And for the last couple of games, we've not been playing that. And it's pretty frustrating that you've got someone who can score you goals, but we're not playing to their strengths.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Kind of aside from that, and in relation to Northampton, mm-hmm. Thoughts on Dallas and Nibs so far, how they've been used and kind of the situation, because we seem to have a glut of strikers now and we do talk about it repeatedly, but Sam Smith is producing and scoring, that is a given, but there's still very much grey area over who should play and when and why.
Yeah, when Nibs has played, he seems to have played sort of behind the strikers, which is so strange. You know, it just doesn't look to suit him at all. I just wonder whether either of them are ready. Nibs is still very raw. Mm-hmm. Dallas hasn't played much football. You wonder if it's just a case of bedding them in, but you know, they're in the squad, so
yeah. We obviously don't talk about EFL trophy games on this pod quite rightly, mm-hmm. but one of the comments from the penalty defeat to Arsenal in the week was Dallas and Nibs started, and against an Arsenal under 21 defence, they looked pretty weak. So if you transfer that to, say, a League Two defence, you know, like we saw Exeter yesterday, big defenders, very strong, they're going to struggle. So that you know, so I get that, and you know, you're right, maybe they're not ready, but then you're not going to be ready if you don't get match time, game time, get minutes on the pitch. And I think the frustrating thing for me at the moment is not that Calderwood isn't starting them, but it's that he's not bringing them into the game with longer left. So Northampton is a prime example of this. Dallas got, what, 10 minutes? 10 minutes at the end. Nibs got a bit longer, but like Tom said, he played behind a striker. You know, he wasn't a 10 when we signed him. So what's that? What's that about?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about Northampton, because I'll be honest, I've spent the last 2 weeks trying to sort of blot it out of my head. It was so bad.
It was dismal, wasn't it?
It was absolutely appalling. The goals we conceded were just sloppy. It was just not at the right level for the whole game. We didn't really offer anything, even at 2-0.
They were horrific goals to concede. They were basically the same, ball over the top. One of the issues with having three at the back is it creates space, and Northampton were just planting balls into that space, hoping that something stuck. And you know, Elliot Ward got outpaced on the first goal. It's not really a surprise. And yeah, the second goal again, there was an issue around sort of the pace in his getting rid of the ball, and I think it somehow ended up going in off Taft in the end, didn't it? The second goal. But they were very, very simple goals.
And yeah.
Quite pathetic, the level of defending there.
Cambridge do seem a little bit they tend to have ropey moments in defence, don't they? And in front of me here it says, who is the bigger liability, Harry Darling or Elliot Ward? We've touched on Ward. We've seen Darling play really well at times, but he's still growing as a player.
Yeah.
And there are mistakes there.
Absolutely. And the other thing about that, you know, about him growing as a player, learning the game, he's also learning a new system. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have played 3-5-2 as going through like the youth team. And what we need to be patient about and realise is that in that 3-5-2 system, as a centre back, you are going to be more exposed than if you're in a back four. So with that comes territory for him to learn. And I don't know, I feel like he's the kind of player that's good enough if he plays out of his skin, but if he doesn't do that, then he's fairly woeful. And obviously probably needs a bit more support from those that he's playing with, and he didn't get that pace-wise against Northampton. But I don't know if he's... I don't know if liability's a fair word. I mean, I'm trying to think how many goals he maybe cost us this season. Salford away was one, but...
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, liability's probably a bit harsh. he's just a young player who inevitably will make mistakes. I think it's that simple. He's obviously going to be a good player for us. Moving forward, like you say about Nibs and Dallas, there's kind of no real way to you know, improve them other than playing them. I think when he's played, he's done pretty well overall. I think the issue is, you know, Northampton especially, you know, playing against sort of quite experienced, quite wily strikers. And it's tough if you're a young player. It's quite a steep learning curve. I'm no doubt we'll get there. To be honest, I'm obviously not happy to see him making mistakes, but you know, I can put up with it if it's you know, someone who's more than likely going to be an asset for us moving forward.
I think I've seen more games where he's played well, considering last season as well as this season, than games where he's played woefully. I think one of the other things to remember is that some of his more questionable performances this season have come when the whole team can be pretty questionable. You know, Northampton, who came out of that game with any credit really, maybe Luke Hannon, maybe Dimi in goal, but other than that, I think everyone was fairly woeful, so that's kind of dragged him down as well. And likewise, Salford, everyone was pretty dismal. So, yeah, I'm not against seeing him in the team, although it was good to have Greg Taylor back yesterday. But then a back three of Taylor, Ward and Taft isn't exactly full of pace, is it?
No.
One of the other things about Nibs, just thinking about it, when he has come on the last couple of games, I feel like indirectly he has made a difference. Thinking to that Crawley game, him coming on, did Dunk come on? Yeah, Dunk came on, and it just brought an injection of pace, which adds to that kind of that urgency and that sticking with it that we talked about at the very top of the pod about, you know, leaving it late to get results and making your own luck. So, yeah, jury's still out on Nibs for me. Doesn't strike me as being a natural striker. I think he's still trying to find his way.
Yeah.
Dallas would like to see a bit more of, but he does look quite weak.
Interesting to see Dallas. I had thought he was going to be pretty decent at the start of the season, but he hasn't really shown too much from what I've seen of him in a Cambridge shirt yet, but nice to have the options, I suppose.
Just on Sam Smith.
Yep.
That started this last piece of conversation. Tom quite rightly said how great Sam Smith is. I'm not disagreeing with that, but how fucking bad was his penalty against Grimsby? Do you remember that?
Yeah, the penalty was one thing, the follow-up.
The miss. The follow-up.
Part of me has sympathy for the follow-up, because I feel like, and I've never been in this position myself because no one's ever trusted me to take a penalty. However, I'd put it high in the corner if anyone did, Reggie Lamb style. However, if I can imagine if I were in that position where I'd missed and the rebound, I don't know, the rush to sort of get to it, you don't get your head over it. I've got a little bit of sympathy for the follow-up, but I think in general was that penalty cost us big time against Grimsby because first half, get that goal, that completely changes the dynamic of the game.
I was berated by people in the Newmarket Road end for filming it.
Were you in the away end?
No, I was in the Newmarket Road end.
Oh, change your mind.
I filmed it to send to my Grimsby town mate in the other end, the video of it, and then we missed. I'll apologise, put my hands up for that one.
I just wanted to get the penalty in because I scribbled down some penalty stats.
That's how I
spend my Sunday morning. And when I say I scribbled them down, props to Matthew Gooding on Twitter. If you don't follow him, you should do, because he's a great follow if you're a Cambridge United fan. But after the Grimsby game, he tracked down some stats, and I thought it'd be quite relevant to read those out. So he worked out that since being back in the league, the 14-15 season, we've been awarded 28 penalties.
Wow.
Anyone want to guess how many of those we've scored?
I am going to say
I'd guess
19.
I'd guess half.
So 19.
Yeah.
So half of 28 would be
14.
Maths.
We've scored 16, which equals 57%. Our best season, 2015-16, we took 5 and we scored 4. And our worst season? Anyone remember our worst season for Pens?
Last season?
It was last season. We took two and we missed two.
We only had two penalties last season.
Wow, yeah.
I can remember Giovanni Brown missing one.
Yeah, he hit the post.
He's not very good at penalties.
No. No. No, yeah, because Giovanni Brown missed one at the Abbey. And then... I'm not sure who took
that. I think he missed two at the Abbey, didn't he? I think he missed one against Northampton, which he sort of waited for the keeper to go the other way, which he did, and then he hit the post. And I think another one was saved.
Mm. Yeah, well, good stats. Cheers, Matthew Gooden. And cheers, Jordan. Just a little note before we look ahead to games on that Grimsby game. There's some good stats in that one. So at this point last season, there was 20 goals in 14 games this season going into the Grimsby game.
Mm-hmm.
Last season, we didn't reach that tally till Boxing Day. So... a marked improvement on the start of last season. And
so
then,
it took 24 games to score the same number of goals that we scored in 14 games this season.
So, yeah, we berated Cambridge United for not having enough firepower, and we told them to get strikers, and that's what they did because they listened to this pod.
Absolutely.
And we've conceded 14 at this point. Last year, we'd conceded 27. So, yeah, it's certainly an improvement from Cambridge United on last season, but we can't be helped. Can't be berated for like not wanting to, you know, progress.
It's an odd one, isn't it? I think what the statistics show and what our league position shows, so statistics like that and our league position as it is currently, just goes to show that there has been an improvement under Calderwood. And I think what we're maybe realising now is that the way we play, there's a better quality to it and we are able to get results. But the players that are playing that sort of system and that formation are perhaps not as good, if you get me.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of the complete contrast to, say, Sean Derry's team, which was full of talent and full of quality players. But the setup and the formation and the tactics that were implemented brought out the worst in them. I don't know. We're going to talk about Calderwood later because we've got loads of questions about him from listeners. But for me, I think what this shows is that there is progress under Calderwood, and I don't know, he grinds out results, but I think it's still a work in progress, and I'm still pro Calderwood as it stands.
Mm. Yeah, he's probably made a rod for his own back, really, in the fact that his aspirations are pretty, you know, heady, and you know, he's put a lot of pressure on his back that if we're not making the playoffs, then he's kind of made. Yeah, pretty big statement there. But, yeah, hopefully Cambridge can push on. Coming up in the second part, we're going to look ahead at the rest of November and the start of December. Right, coming up in this second part, we're going to look ahead now to a very tricky November and a very travelly November for Cambridge United. It starts with a trip down the road on Tuesday and the cup we don't talk about, but then up to Walsall on the 16th. It was a new away day for Cambridge in the Football League this time round, and not a team I know bags about, but they've lost the last five, so it's a good time to play them.
Well. They're probably looking at us and saying, good time to play us. Yeah. We have this knack of ending people's poor runs of form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom's looking forward to Walsall away.
I've supported Cambridge for far too long to look at a team that's lost five on a spin and think, yes, come on.
I
look at that and it fills me with dread. Didn't
Crawley, when they came and played us, hadn't they lost a couple on the trot? And I think two of them... The last two games before us, they lost quite handsomely, like 3-0, 4-0.
Mm.
So, they should have beaten us. So, form is it's not something we worry too much about.
No, I suppose not. But, it's going to be an important one for Cambridge, for sure. If they want to keep within that distance of the playoffs, they definitely need to win this game, because the Tuesday after, they then travel to Exeter, Cambridge United. So, this is the replay we're talking about. It's not ideal, is it? You know, having a midweek trip to Exeter in this busy point of the season. But I saying that, Cambridge will take it 100% seriously and try and win that, won't they?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You'd really hope so. Yeah.
I think, do you still get a split of the attendance in the FA Cup?
Yeah, I think so.
So I know obviously it won't be a huge attendance, but considering we don't have home game until the second weekend of December, like the 7th of December, a little bit of gate money via that extra game, hopefully a lovely 35 grand cup win, like match winning money would tie us over for the lack of sort of home games, but yeah, not ideal.
Do you who do you fancy in the next round if you could have your pick? Maldon and Tiptree would be an interesting one. They've won at Leighton Orient, so that's a scalp for them. Or Kingstonian. Would you like a lower league team? Like a non-league team?
Yeah, I think at this stage of the competition you want the worst team at home.
Yeah.
Just get through.
Get through and then, rub your hands together for round three again.
The question that comes up every time is, do or would you take Peterborough? But I didn't see how they got on against Stevenage. All I saw was that the lights cut out.
They got quite a late equaliser yesterday. They've got a replay as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that'll be an interesting one, yeah. There's still quite a few minnows, if you will, in the hat, and it'll be interesting. It's always good to see the draw. Would be lovely to have another day out for the fans, like the Manchester United duo of games. But, yeah, I mean, FA Cup, whilst it's, you know, important for teams like Cambridge, you know, the league has to be the priority. And then a trip to Carlisle... at the end of the month, Tom Walker's shaking his head already.
An outrageous amount of travelling, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is absolutely astounding. Fair play to anyone who does all the games in November, because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a serious, some serious journeys there. And yeah, Carlisle again, you know, they've been kind of all right this season, but not particularly good.
Sounds familiar.
Cambridge and Carlisle.
It's been a long time since I've seen them as low in the league as they are, though. They've been steady playoff or upper mid-table team for the last few years since we've been back in the league. So, what are they, 19th at the moment?
Mm.
That's a pretty poor return on their part. Hopefully our good form at Carlisle away continues.
Yeah. The thing with this one relegation place in League Two, courtesy of Bury, is it's kind of removed pressure from the relegation thing, and I think if you're down there and not looking over your shoulder as much, I feel like, you know, teams are kind of getting a bit slack and just let, you know, the pressure's off. That's what I'm feeling.
Well, they should reconsider, because Morecambe have just appointed a very good manager, so Morecambe will do their annual survival. So yeah, I think that bottom 5-6 probably should start
caring a bit more. Yes, yeah.
I don't know. I think the next couple of league games are quite pivotal for us. I feel like we are playing teams that are struggling. We're playing away where we, you know, have had better luck away from home than at home. And I feel like if we were to prove to people that we could go into the second part of the season and look to edge away into a playoff contention, we'd definitely need to pick up, I don't know, 4 to 6 points in those games, I feel. I think if we come through those games with, say, 2 points, I think it just goes to cement that we are a slightly better team than we were last year, but not a team ready to kick on. And I don't know, if we get 3 or 4 points, I guess we're somewhere in the middle.
Absolutely. December, the first game in December, just as a note, is a home game against Plymouth. Depending how the games go previously to that, that could be a really important, and it's really important to get Cambridge's December off to a flyer, and that's a chance for some points, because Plymouth are, you know, pretty much identical form to Cambridge this season, and you'd fancy Cambridge, if they could get 3 points from that, to potentially push on. It's the hope that kills you, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? We're getting ourselves in a position at the end of December to then go into a transfer window. That's kind of the crucial thing. Mm. If we carry on as we are, I think most people would be fine with that. If we could just edge ourselves a little bit closer, I think a lot of people will go into January and go, "Oh, the right transfer's in. We can kick on in the second half and maybe have a flirt with getting a playoff place." All big ifs, though.
The thing is, whenever we preview the sort of games ahead, we always seem to say we'll know more about where we're going to be come the end of the season after this next four games against whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always been 12 afterwards.
Yeah.
So I think we're starting to realise that that's probably the sort of team we are. We're just not very good. We're sort of not very bad, but we're not very good either.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, you look at how we followed up that really impressive win against Exeter. We went to Northampton, who were, I think we were in a similar position to Northampton going into that game. And it's like, right, well, if we can not get beat here against a team who are got a bit of form about them and are touching the playoffs, then all that was in theory should make us, you know, outsiders for the playoffs. And we got absolutely beasted. So yeah, it just goes to show the inconsistency and probably the mediocrity of the team, which will ultimately see us not end the season on a high. But I don't know. I think the right recruitment in the summer, we've got a good basis.
It's such a frustrating one in League Two as well, isn't it? Because if you're where we are, it isn't like the Premier League where, you know, you've not really got any hope of breaking into that sort of top category.
Mm.
You're always like 3 or 4 points away. So you can see it, but you're just never quite getting in there. And that's just the nature of the league, unfortunately. That's why it's so frustrating, I think.
Mm. Especially when you look at like Forest Green the top.
Yeah.
We really should have beat them at home. You look at who else is in the playoffs at the moment, and it's like, well, we've beaten some of you and drawn with some of you. You know, Swindon are third, and they were much better than us, so no qualms there. But it is very much a League Two this year, which is very open, and there's no standout team that's going to run away with it at the moment. That may change in the second half of the season. But someone on the message board termed this phrase the Derry Zone, and I quite like it. It's we're close to the playoffs without actually being close to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think that's spot on about where we are at the moment. Because like Tom says, you can see it. We're 3-4 points away. But then you see the performances on the pitch. You're like, that's not a playoff team, with the exception of the Exeter win. But
yeah. Absolutely right. It's going to be an interesting end of November and December. And then, of course, the next pod might have a little bit of a Christmassy theme, or it might be the one after. But we are getting towards that time of year.
Yeah, hopefully this doesn't go wrong, and I don't regret this on future pods, but hopefully there'll be a issue 5 of the UTAS zine available for the Leighton Orient game just before Christmas. Perfect stocking filler.
Absolutely.
We'll
be doing autographs outside the ground as well.
Well, I there's also rumour that we might do like a video to rival the John Lewis one, but
okay.
More on that later.
More to come. Right, we'll take your questions before wrapping things up here. Firstly, Ian says, are we missing Gary Deegan?
Not really. I can't be any more detailed than that, sorry. No,
I miss his videos.
Yeah, it's odd. It's weird that it's like, it's not like it's shrouded in mystery. It's just like, no one's saying anything about him.
I wonder if others find themselves a bit like me, who kind of sort of get a little bit nostalgic for things when they don't have it around. So part of me is like, oh, maybe I do miss Gary Deegan. Maybe I do miss like that hard man and that ball winner. But then I have to think back properly about what he was like when he played. And it's like, well, maybe he did win tackles, but then
gave the ball away a lot.
Nothing then happened there afterwards, apart from he'd passed it sideways. So do I miss that? Maybe a little bit, considering how woeful most of our passing is at the moment, but no, I don't think Gary Deegan's the answer to improving our form.
Friend of the pod, Matt Robinson, used to call him Crabby Deegan because he could only move sideways. Right, Harry says, should we extend Richard's contract past January?
Sorry, the way it's typed on the screen, I was like, who's Richard?
I was thinking Richard Money, and I was like, how is this working? But no, Mark Richards. Should we? That's the question.
Last pod, Tom, you said yes.
Well,
and you're stalling already. So are you going back on what you said?
The thing is, a couple of us were talking about this yesterday, and that if his job on the pitch is to be this physical presence, well, there's better players out there for that.
Absolutely.
And they're, you know, in that case, then no, you don't, and you go and get someone who can do that job better, if like, because that isn't him as a player. But like I say, he's built a career on base of being a goal poacher, and who wouldn't want an experienced, proven scorer at this level in the squad? But again, it comes back to what we've talked about so much over the last couple of years, really, in that if you're relying on these guys, that's when you're in, you know, in danger, because at the moment he's not performing.
We're desperately missing Jabo Abere. We're missing that other option in terms of our strikers.
Yeah.
You know, you've got ones for the future in Dallas and Nibs. Nibs has a bit of pace. You've got Sam Smith, who's got quality around him, and you've got Richards, who's a poacher and plays well when he's not got his back to goal, which is what we're, how we're playing him at the moment. And then, yeah, Jabo was that fifth option. He is a target man. He is a bit of a physical presence. Going into the season, we weren't ever going to play Mark Richards as much as we're playing.
No.
I think that was evident. I think Richards even said that in an interview at the start of the season. It was going to be some sort of rotation between Jabo and him and then someone else. If you could get a new striker in January, who is a target man, who is a bit more physical within our budget, that means you can also keep Richards. I'd keep him. But like I said last time, if the options were you had to get rid of Richards to get that other option in, I think I'd possibly be leaning more towards that.
Yeah, definitely. Similar from Mark. Mark's asked if we should extend Ward's contract.
This is a different Mark who's tweeted in, not Mark Richards.
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry.
He's not deflecting his poor form onto someone else.
Yeah, that'd be quite catty.
I don't really know, to be honest.
No.
I feel like he brings something to the team. I feel like he brings something to the squad, but...
Look, we need a scapegoat every season.
Yeah.
You know, that if he brings anything to the squad, he's got that, hasn't he?
Great.
Someone for us to blame everything on.
Great, yeah. I think that's good that we've nominated him for that. So, yeah, please extend his contract. And, yeah, we'll talk about
Liam
him more.
Liam O'Neill desperately wants him here to... take the blame off of him.
He does, yeah. He loves a red card, as O'Neill. Right.
I mean, if to be fair, if Elliot Ward could be a little bit more consistent, I think he's a good he's a good option to have in the squad. I don't know what sort of money he's on. I can imagine he's probably on a fair whack.
Yeah.
So maybe it might be better using his wages elsewhere. I don't know. I just think in January, I would probably look to get rid of Louis John.
Yeah.
I'd maybe think about Darling and Davies going out on loans. And if you did that, then I'd probably say you'd have to keep Ward.
Yeah.
But I think we are... I don't know. I think we're a quality striker and a quality centre-back short of fixing quite a few issues.
Yeah, that kind of follows on to Stanislav Pele's question, which is, where should we strengthen in January and what's our strongest formation? The answer to the formation question is we don't know. Like... We don't know at the moment, but three at the back seems, you know, might work, but we're not very good at it.
Well, we could have a bit of a guess at our best formation. You know, I wouldn't be adverse to say a 4-3-3,
4-4-2,
or a 3-4-3. That's what we played against Exeter. That worked all right. So,
yeah. Send your answers in on the back of a postcard. So you think a striker and a defender in January?
Yes, please.
Tom?
Yeah, I'd probably go with that. I think...
If you can keep Carruthers fit, I wouldn't... And you can extend Jack Rolls' loan, I wouldn't look to bring in a midfielder. Okay. However, if Rolls goes back and we continue to have this palaver with Carruthers constantly being injured, I'd say you need a creative... ball-passing midfielder as well.
Yeah, Daniel asks a two-pronged question. Just the first part, are United a better team playing a back four?
But we've not really seen much of it.
No.
That's the issue. Mm. What we have seen has been pretty okay.
We've got good fullbacks to play in a 4-4-2. I think Noel and Dan Jones would definitely give the impression that we could play a four at the back. I wouldn't mind seeing... like I said before, I wouldn't mind seeing like a 4-3-3 where you've got someone behind Smith, Rolls, Lamb. Maybe it's a bit narrow, but I wouldn't be adverse to seeing us play that formation. I don't know if I'd want to see a 4-4-2, but it's not the end of the world, I guess.
A bit basic.
Yeah, I just don't think we've... I guess we've got Dunk who could play that winger role on the left, and you've got Hannon on the right, but it's not... They're not the best wingers.
No, no, you don't want to have to compromise just to make it work. But, yeah, certainly interesting to see if they do employ formation change and do go with the back four moving through November and December. Daniel also said, based on Colin Calderwood's comments yesterday, is it OK to boo slash cheer your own player when subbed? So, yeah, Colin said after the Exeter game, I've got to mention that supporters are supporters to support the team. A little bit too much individual criticism, I felt, for one or two players, and I don't think that's right. I don't think that's in the best interest of the individual or definitely the club.
So this has gone on the last couple of weeks. I think Elliot Ward got ironic cheer against Crawley, and then yesterday was O'Neill.
I don't think there's necessarily a simple answer to this. I think there's a few different parts to it. The first one is that fans pay their money. If the product that they're paying for is not very good, they're well within their rights to voice that. I also feel on the same way that we do, and it, let's be honest, it's probably not just Cambridge fans. We've seen it a couple of slightly more high profile examples recently of players being subjected to quite specific criticism, but we do tend to scapegoat players quite a lot, and it tends to be one or two who don't get away with anything. Liam O'Neill's the one that springs to mind, where actually he's been very good and yet still comes in for quite a lot of criticism, which is quite odd. But the part that I think I would be, I feel kind of most strongly about is that Coldwood's got to be pretty careful criticising the fans. He's got to be very careful because, he's not really done anything yet.
It
reminds me a little bit of when Richard Money made his quite infamous comments now. Well, we were 10 points clear at the top of the league when he said that in the conference. Regardless whether he thinks it's a little bit too much, regardless of what his thoughts are on that, you've got to be careful criticising a pretty dwindling fan base. When things aren't going so well on the pitch. So I think it's a fair comment to make, but he's got to be a bit careful, basically.
For me, I don't understand what it achieves. During a game, booing someone as they go off or fake cheering someone as they go off, I don't get what it achieves. It's unnecessary, in my opinion, and it's a bit of a pet peeve. At the end of a game, I'm perfectly okay with people booing.
I've kind of wondered at times whether it is really targeted. I think it was Salford, the game that I remember. I think, and this is going back a bit now, but I'm pretty sure Ward went off for Dallas. It might have been. And I think the jeering was because it was a 90-second minute and that was the first
That's the first I'll be made, yeah.
Rather than it being specifically aimed at Ward. And I think the players that he's referring to yesterday were Ward and O'Neill as well. The performances weren't very good, but I kind of agree, Jordan, but I also kind of think that if fans are paying their money, they're well within their rights and, well within the rights of voice their opinion.
At the end of the day, these players are getting paid to play football. And it's their job, and people are spending their hard-earned money on supporting that football club, and have the right to voice their.
I think it's a slippery slope because Tom makes a very good point about Calderwood has to be careful about what he says.
Yeah,
I would also say that perhaps there's a second side to that, and that is that perhaps fans also need to be careful what they do because it may knock on and, may have effects on players, and that may have effects on the whole team.
Possibly.
Look at Arsenal. Look how toxic certain parts of Arsenal are at the moment. And in my opinion, a good chunk of that is down to Arsenal TV creating this culture where it's perfectly okay for people to really lay into their players. And if you get to a certain point where you break your club captain, and fair enough, he's not had a very good season or good last season. But if you're getting to a point where you're able to break people who are put forward as your manager to be your club sort of captain, that's a really dark place to be in as a club. And I'm not saying that we are anywhere near that. Don't get me wrong. I don't think we are. But I think there is a danger on both sides. There's a danger on the club alienating players. The club alienating fans, or the manager alienating fans by attacking them. But also players being affected by the club, by the club supporters and their sort of reactions. So it's it's a murky,
tricky one,
murky yeah. kind of area.
I think the just kind
but
of.
But also, we hate happy clappers, so you, yeah. you know you yeah. need some sort of.
I think just kind of finally on that. I mean, it's probably worth pointing out that as a fan base, we are extremely patient. You know, we sat through best part of 3 years of quite terrible football with Sean Derry without it ever really getting too bad.
Mm.
I know there was a sort of a half-assed protest at one point, but other than the odd boo here and there, there wasn't really any sort of toxicity around the club. And I look at other clubs in this league, I look at other clubs in other leagues, and, you know, as a fan base, we're actually pretty forgiving.
Mm.
So, you know, it could be worse, basically. And
yeah.
like I say, if the players aren't performing, you're always in line for criticism. And sometimes that'll be vocal, sometimes that'll be on the message boards, the social media channels, and whether it's right or wrong, it's going to happen. So,
yeah, part of the game.
I can kind of see both sides to it, to be honest. But yeah. I'm more concerned about Calderwood, to be honest, doing his job properly before
yeah.
pointing at us and telling us how to support the team.
Yeah, tune in, Colin. Cambridge Bear says, our league attendances are low this season. Should the club be doing more to encourage locals, kids, clubs, etc.? What are the incentives can they offer? So, 2,302 for the Exeter game. 3 years ago, we had 2,620 for Dover in the first round. 4 years ago, 2,974 against Basingstoke. 5 years ago, 2,870 against Fleetwood. So, good football would be a good answer for that. We'll get more people coming, I think. You know, a successful team breeds, you know, a well-attended team.
So Jack's stolen the most obvious answer there.
Yeah, sorry. I wanted to get right in there.
I'm going to ask you a question, but take away the best option.
Yeah.
I guess there's kind of two things here. I think the attendances you just read out were related to the FA Cup.
Yeah.
So obviously the game yesterday against Exeter was FA Cup first round, mm-hmm. and the attendance was pretty dismal. And not trying to make excuses, but I think if you look around games yesterday, attendances in general for the FA Cup first round were pretty bad. I think Sunderland got 7,000 at home. They normally get 25,000 to 30,000. Mm. So, and I'm not trying to make an excuse, but I think yesterday's attendance isn't one in isolation. I think the point, the more relevant point that Cambridge Bear and I think someone else messaged in about attendances as well, is that actually before yesterday they've been dropping off. We had the spike against Grimsby because we had that incentive, and I think that gives perfect sort of evidence to warrant doing more promotions. I think maybe we need to think outside of the box and not just do to local clubs and schools. I mean, we definitely should, but that shouldn't be the only answer. Maybe we should look at, you know, cheaper tickets for, say, free games in a season, or trying to sort of maybe target the fact that there's the population in Cambridge has changed a lot and significantly over the last 10 to 15 years. You get a lot of people moving here now for work, and maybe there's something there. Maybe, you know, discounts for people that already have a team or a season ticket elsewhere or something like that. I know it sounds a bit sneaky, but I think we need to make the most of the fact that there is a newer population in Cambridge, and people are probably into football and already have a team but maybe aren't adverse to coming and seeing their local team. I think there are other obvious things that we can do to make the club more attractive. Some of those are longer term.
Halftime show.
Some of those are longer terms, like facilities and stadium. Like, it's not an attractive ground to come to if you're, say, a young family or something like that, but there are also shorter term things that we can do, and yeah, like Cambridge Bear says, there should be some sort of incentives or more sort of focused targeting. And I think the Grimsby example was a good one, that we targeted, and, you know, fair play to the people behind that incentive. They targeted that sort of freshers week, and they've got results. So it just goes to show, a bit of thinking and a bit of targeting, you can do it. But yeah, like you said, the quality of football is also a big factor.
I think, and this is specifically for yesterday, and a little bit about what you say about bringing families as well, Jordan, make it cheaper.
Yeah,
it's the most obvious one. You know, it was normal prices yesterday. You know there's not going to be as much demand for an FA Cup game. You know that season ticket holders have to buy a ticket for the game. Make it a bit cheaper. You know, even if you're knocking £2 or £3 off the ticket,
mm-hmm.
all right, get more people in. And you know, the thing about Cambridge at the moment is, let's say for example you're a family, mum, dad, two kids, it's like £100 for tickets basically.
Yeah,
they're thereabouts, so sort of £70-80, food, drink, programs, inevitably something in the club shop as well. You know, it's an expensive day out to watch pretty dire football, mm-hmm. and that's the main problem.
Mm.
It's not a particularly attractive prospect, especially when you know you're 45 minutes away from North London. Where you've got Arsenal, Spurs, obviously just opened up that massive new stadium. And if you're going to spend a fortune on going to watch football, then most families who don't necessarily have a burning passion for Cambridge United would probably want a better product.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. And I can understand that. So that's the obvious one. Offer some sort of... Mm-hmm. They might have an offer, it, to be fair. I might be being harsh, but some sort of, I don't know, family incentives, this sort of stuff. The thing they did really well before as well was these sort of... I think they used to do sort of like tickets within a season ticket sort of thing. If you know what I mean, sort of like 5, 6, 7 games, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you pay whatever, you get a bit of a discount, and then you can go... If you don't fancy it on a Tuesday night, you can use it for the next Saturday or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, like you say, Jordan, think outside the box a bit. This isn't a new issue.
No.
Struggling to attract mm-hmm. fans. Ultimately, we're a football club located in a city which doesn't really care about the football team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the main problem. And, you know, Cambridge United have been going for more than 100 years now, and that's not changed yet. And the likelihood of that changing in the future, barring massive investment in Premier League football, it's probably not going to happen.
Interesting one, and certainly a kettle of fish to be spoken about in great detail. James has been in contact. Thanks for all your support, James. Is CC a fraud? I mean, no. He's a football manager.
Fraud, like, in what sense?
Yeah,
look, Lee Power was kind of fraud. Or
we're going to be careful. Here.
He's not claiming to be.
Oh, we're on hot water. there's no lawyers listening.
Yeah. No, Colin. We you're not a fraud.
Let's just move on.
Yeah. Tom. Not Tom sitting opposite me, but another Tom, I presume. Is Colin the right man to lead us forward if our target is promotion?
So similar questions.
The next month is going to be it's such a cliche, but it's going to be key in that.
Is our target promotion?
Do we need another month? Do we need another month to make our mind up on this?
No, I don't think we're good enough to be in the playoffs. Genuinely, I don't. Yeah,
no, we're not. The evidence is there from this season. The evidence is there from much of last season. We're not under Colin Calderwood at the moment. A team who are going to achieve anything. It's that simple.
Other than Colin Calderwood, who actually said our target is promotion? I don't think the board,
no,
our owner, Mr. Barry, would be saying promotion is our target, given, you know, the setup of the team, the setup of the club, and some pretty big fundamental things about the club that need to change before we can say that we are in a position to be a League One or higher football club. Obviously, Calderwood set himself a target of promotion, and fair play to him at the start of the season for having that kind of optimism. And there are points when you think actually maybe it's not all madness, but I don't know. I guess we talked statistics earlier, which sort of point out that there is a gradual improvement around the quality of our positioning in the table and the results that we're getting. And I think, I don't know, I guess we are making progress. We seem to be grinding out these results, and the football might be boring, but we are in a better place. Is Calderwood the right man to take us forward if our target's promotion? Maybe, if promotion is an aim for next season or the season after. This season, I don't think we'll be playoffs, but I don't think we'll be massively far away from it.
I think we'll end about 7 points outside the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a glut of managers waiting in the wings either. It's not
I don't really have any sort of real active desire to sack the manager and find someone new. He's probably doesn't deserve to be sacked. I don't think that's what we're saying. I don't think that's the question that's been asked. But I would say that at the moment there's a couple of quite high profile managers out there who are out of a job. I think specifically Paul Tisdale. Have a word. would he do it? You know, he's got a proven record at this level. I don't know. You know, I think there's a thing in football where most clubs would only make change if it's going very badly. And I think often there's a case to be made for, well, if there's a better option out there, then go and do it. Be more proactive, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily advocating that, but I'm not necessarily advocating us, you know, going behind the current manager's back to go and find someone else while he's still in the job. But you've got to be thinking on your feet. And if somebody very good becomes available, which they have, maybe you think about it.
Yeah.
It's got to be an option. You've got to think about it at least.
And Colin's definitely not a fraud. Just want to put a line under that. No one's calling anyone a fraud in this situation, okay? Right, listen, it's been a bumper edition of Under the Aberstand. Hopefully we'll welcome back Julian Roberts further down the line in the next edition. At Abbeystand Pod is our social media to get us on there. Jordan Wallen, thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Thanks very much, mate.
Is that a weird way to end it?
A little bit.
Yeah, it felt very weird.
Sorry.
Just say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah, Julian can do something with that.